Thank you, Chip, and good morning. Let's imagine that you run a cloud service, a really popular online social networking site, and you're currently running inside of a data center that your cloud operator has given you access to. But your cloud operator actually has multiple data centers that are scattered across the planet, and you want to spread your application across these different data centers. Now, in order to do that, you will probably have to solve a difficult problem of having to partition your data across these different data centers. So we built a system called Volley to solve that problem, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. Not only do these cloud operators have lots of data centers today, they're actually building them out at a fairly rapid pace. This is just four of the recent data centers that Microsoft has built. Microsoft has actually built out a fair number more in recent times, but these are just the ones that I'm able to disclose. And you can tell from the dates that they're coming online at a fairly rapid pace. And you can also tell from the locations that they're coming online in a variety of different places. Now, this is not specific to Microsoft. There are a bunch of cloud operators that have multiple data centers that are scattered across the planet. And as a service operator running on top of this infrastructure, you want to spread your application across these different data centers. And in doing so, you'd want to keep two motivations in mind. One is that from the user's point of view, you want the user to have low latency to your application. There are a bunch of studies that have shown how users react to high latency. But in doing so, as an operator, you also want to limit your cost. And two of the major sources of cost for you are your WAN bandwidth, and in particular, we focus on the bandwidth that you consume between your data centers, and the capacity that you've provisioned in each data center. Now, if your service is hosting a lot of dynamic data, so let's say in the case of a social networking site, your users have their walls that where you can update your status and your friends can post messages on there. That wall is a very dynamic piece of data because there are lots of writes happening to it. And if cost is a major concern for your service, then partitioning this data across different data centers is an attractive option for you because in partitioning this data, you're not going to consume any WAN bandwidth between your data centers for replication. So the major challenge that has been unmet so far is automatically placing this user data that's dynamic or any other type of dynamic application state across these different data centers while considering both the user latency and your service operator cost, namely the WAN bandwidth between your data centers and the capacity that you have provisioned in each of these locations, and doing this at cloud scale. What we show in this work is that you can actually do a good job of reducing both your user latency and your operator cost. Our research contribution is to define this problem and to devise an algorithm and build a system around it. This was a particularly exciting challenge for us for a number of reasons. One is that the scale of some of these services is really large. We're talking about services with hundreds of millions of users and correspondingly large amounts of data that they host. We also need a practical solution. It has to be practical not only in terms of the platform that it runs on and how long it takes, but also in terms of having to address the cost concerns that an operator has. This is also very important for a variety of online services today, and from the trends that we see, this is going to become important for more and more services in the future. And lots of cloud providers, or all the major cloud providers, have a variety of data centers across the planet, and they're building out more. So this is going to become an even more pressing need to geodistribute your application across these data centers. So before I go into the design of our system, it's going to be instructive to look at how users share data in such services today. Now, for a lot of these services, we can model data sharing in them in a very traditional publish-subscribe way. So let's say we're talking about an online social networking site such as Facebook. You might have a couple of users. Let's say it's me and John, and each one of us, we have our own walls. And then we have our news feeds that tell us about any updates to my wall or to the walls of my friends that I'm subscribing to. So I might post an update to my wall saying that, hey, I'm at NSDI, and that update is going to go from my wall then to the news feeds for both myself as well as my friends. and then it's going to go to those users. And then John might read that and say, hey, no way, I'm at NSDI too. And you know, he'll post an update, you know, to my wall, and then it's going to follow the same route. And then I might post an equally interesting comment on his wall saying that, hey, you know, let's go grab dinner. And he might say, maybe not. And very quickly, you see how these different data items have interdependencies between them. Now, this is not specific to just social networking sites. We are starting to see a bunch of business productivity applications that look a lot like this as well. Things like Microsoft Office Online and Microsoft SharePoint, where employees are sharing documents between each other and doing collaborative editing on them. Now, in the context of this talk, we're going to be looking at two major services. One is Microsoft Live Messenger. It's a very, very popular instant messaging site, which has a bunch of users that are measured in the hundreds of millions. And actually, it hosts a very large number of conversations every month. It's measured in the tens of billions. And we're also going to be looking at Live Mesh, which Alec had described earlier. It's a newer application that lets you do a variety of things, including synchronize your files between different machines that you own, and also share your files across different users. For both of these applications, sharing of the data in them looks very much like this graph that I've shown on the right. So first, let's look at where these users are that are using these services. This is a scatter plot for users of Live Messenger and where they use the service across an entire month. And what this is showing you is that for really popular services, you've got users that are going to be scattered all across the planet. And this picture looks fairly similar for other types of popular services like Live Mesh or Xbox Live. And the point of this graph is that if all of your data is in one location, like one data center on the planet, that can be really bad for latency for your users that are far away from it. So you really do want to spread your data and your application across different data centers that are in different parts of the world. We also want to look at whether users travel when they use this service. This graph is a CDF, so the vertical goes from 0 to 100%, and the horizontal shows distance that the user traveled. It's measured in thousands of miles, so it goes from 0 to 10,000 miles on the far right. And what I'm calculating over here is distance from a geographic centroid. I'm going to define geographic centroid more formally later on. But in this context, what this means is if I logged in, let's say, 100 times from San Jose, and then once I traveled to Thailand and I logged in once from that service, your geographic centroid is going to be close to San Jose. And over here, I'm going to be showing you the distance between San Jose and Thailand. And what we're seeing over here, let's look at the blue line for Messenger users. About 50% of users always use the service from the same location, at least during this month that we looked at. And then the remaining 50% of users actually traveled and use the service while they're traveling. People who are depicted in that new movie Up in the Air are contributing to the right-hand part of the graph. To give you an idea of the scale, halfway across the planet is about 12,000 miles. So the point of this graph is that any algorithm that is placing data items that users are accessing needs to account for the fact that these users, they do travel, and they continue to use the service when they're traveling. Now, not only are users using this data while they travel, they also share this data with other users across geographic distances. Now, again, this is a CDF from 0 to 100% on the vertical. On the horizontal, again, I'm showing you distance from a geographic centroid. And if we look at the blue line for Messenger users, Messenger conversations, what we're showing you here is that for about 65% of IM conversations in Live Messenger, the conversations were with other people that were in the same geographic location. But for the remaining 35% of conversations, users actually communicated with people that were in different geographic locations from you. And these were, in some cases, very far away. I've chopped the graph off, but it goes off quite a bit of a distance. And for Live Mesh, it's actually an even larger portion of sharing that is happening across geographic distances. So the point of this graph is that an algorithm that is partitioning this data across different data centers has to handle the fact that these data items may be accessed simultaneously by users that are in different locations. So the sharing of data is making the problem of partitioning your data challenging. You've got a very complex graph that has dependencies not only between users and data items that they're accessing, but also between data items. And you've got users that are scattered everywhere, they travel, and over time, user behavior changes and your application evolves as well. So now I'm going to give you a brief overview of the system that we built. To do that, it's useful to talk about it in the context of a very simple example. Let's suppose that there were three transactions. In the first transaction, a user is updating their wall, A, and their two subscribers, C and D. So an update goes from the IP address that the user A is at to the data item A, which is their wall. And then from data item A, it goes into two RSS feeds that are data items C and D. And then similarly, there are a couple of other transactions as well. So we can take all of these transactions and convert them into a graph. This graph shows you the IP addresses that these transactions came from, the different data items, and their edges between the IP addresses and data items and between the data items. The edge weight gives you the frequency of operations that happen between the two nodes. And this edge weight can also be weighted by the importance of different transactions. What we'd like to do is we'd like to take this graph and overlay it on top of the planet, where we know where these different IP addresses are. These are fixed nodes. And then these data items are things that you can move around across the planet. And in moving that around, what you want to do is you want to place these data items in different data centers that are in different locations. Now, once you do this partitioning across different data centers, this partitioning is going to have an impact on three things. One is that I've placed a certain number of data items in data center X and a different number in Y and Z. And that is going to have an impact on the capacity that I have provisioned in each of these data centers to handle the load that these data items are going to experience. Not only that, the distance that is between the IP address and a data center is going to have an impact on the latency that the user sees. And also the distance between data centers for data items that have transactions between them is also going to impact that latency that the user sees. Also, we have edges that cross data center boundaries. So those operations are between data items that are in different data centers are going to incur WAN bandwidth. And that WAN bandwidth is going to cost you. So our goal was to build a partitioning algorithm that partitions this graph while looking at the latency of these transactions, the WAN bandwidth, and the data center capacity. And we wanted to use an existing algorithm to solve this problem. But we considered looking at sparse cut algorithms. There's been a lot of work in trying to cut a graph in a minimal way. And this models the data item to data item edges very well and trying to optimize for making the smallest number of cuts and reducing your WAN bandwidth consumption. But it wasn't clear to us how to incorporate users and their locations and the distances between these data centers and the users and how that impacts latency. Now, facility location was actually a better fit for this problem than sparse cut algorithms. It models these edges between users and their data items fairly well. But it wasn't clear to us how to incorporate these edges between the data items and the edge costs on them. We also considered using standard commercial optimization packages. We think that it's possible to formulate this as an optimization and run it in one of these packages. But we didn't know how to scale this to a large graph that has hundreds of millions of objects in it. So instead, we designed a heuristic. And in designing this heuristic, we wanted one that lends itself to a highly parallelizable implementation for two reasons. One is that we wanted to handle the large scales of these cloud services that we're familiar with. But also, we know that for these cloud services, they tend to centralize all of their logs into large compute clusters, like a Hadoop or MapReduce cluster, or in our case, a Cosmos cluster. And what we do is that we want to take these logs and build a fully populated graph like I just showed you. And the fixed nodes are the IP addresses for the clients that are at the geographic locations as indicated by the IP addresses. And then we've got the data items, which are nodes that can move freely across the planet. And what we want to do is we want to pull together or attract these nodes, the data items that frequently interact with each other. And the idea behind this is that by pulling them together, that's going to reduce the latency of transactions that depend on these two data items interacting with each other, or an IP address and a data item interacting with each other. And also, if these data items end up being co-located, that's going to reduce your WAN bandwidth between your data centers. And these fixed nodes, which are the client IP addresses, are going to prevent all of the nodes from collapsing onto a single point. Now, not knowing an optimal algorithm, we relied on iterative improvement. The danger, though, with using an iterative algorithm is that they can sometimes take a very long time to converge. So in our experience in using iterative algorithms in other settings like network coordinate systems is that if you start off the algorithm at a reasonable location, that could potentially limit your search space. And in turn, that's going to reduce the number of iterations that you run this for and your total compute time. So here's a brief overview of the Volley algorithm. There are many more details in the paper. So in phase one, we're going to compute this initial placement of data items that's going to help us reduce the number of iterations that we do in phase two, which is where the bulk of the computation happens. In phase one, we're calculating a rough location for each data item. And the way we do that is we look at where the data item was accessed from all the different client IP addresses, and we ignore data item to data item interdependencies over here. And here we're calculating a geographic centroid for each data item. A centroid for a bunch of points in a 2D plane is essentially the center of all of these points. But we calculate it in a weighted way, so if you access it frequently from one location, it's going to be closer to that location. And then we also account for the spherical nature of the planet. Now, this step is highly parallel because you can calculate the centroid for each of these data items independently on this graph. Then we take this initial placement and hand it off to phase two, which runs a bunch of iterations. In each iteration, what we're trying to do is refine this centroid location while considering now not only the client to data item edges, but also the data item to data item edges. And here we're using a weighted spring model where basically it's trying to attract together nodes that frequently interact with each other. But it's modified to work on a coordinate system. And then in phase three, after all of these iterations are done, what we have is, at the start of phase three, we have a placement where data items are scattered all across the planet. But you may not have data centers that are in all of these different locations. So in the final phase, we are limiting these items to individual data centers. And here what we do is we prioritize moving data items that have large numbers of transactions to them to the closest data center. And when a data center is filled to capacity, we then move remaining data items to their second best data center, and so on. So now I'll go over an overview of the system that we built. So Volley consumes a few inputs. One is those request logs that I described earlier. And then it also takes a network cost model that identifies how much WAN bandwidth costs you between your different data centers. And then it needs to know where your data centers are and how much capacity you've provisioned in each one of them. And then Volley runs on a cluster, a compute cluster, with a distributed file system underneath it. For the applications that we consider, they have application servers running in a variety of different data centers, and they were already aggregating all of the application level logs from these different servers into a Cosmos cluster inside of a single data center. And Volley is an analysis job that runs on top of this compute cluster that analyzes all of these logs, runs that algorithm, and then it computes a placement, which it hands off to an application-specific migration mechanism. Volley is not handling the task of actually migrating the data. It hands that off to an application-specific mechanism. The reason we didn't build the migration mechanism itself is that the different properties that we considered implement migration of data differently, and we wanted Volley to be useful for a variety of different services. Now, in running Volley for an entire week's worth of application logs, it takes about 16 clock hours on this cluster that has many thousands of nodes in it. And underneath that, it's actually doing 400 machine hours worth of work. So that gives you a sense for the amount of parallelism that we're achieving here. So now I'll quickly go over some of the evaluation that we've done. So our methodology was we focused solely on the live mesh traces for this evaluation. We looked at an entire month's worth of traces. We computed a placement on the first week, and then we evaluated how good that placement was on the remaining 3 weeks of the month. And in this work, we considered 12 of the data centers that we have servers in. We did two types of evaluation. We did an analytic evaluation where we used a latency model that we developed in prior work that was based on about 50 million latency measurements across 3.5 million end hosts. And then we also did live experiments using PlanetLab clients. I won't have time to go over the live experiment, and I'm going to focus on the analytic evaluation here. And then in doing this evaluation, we focused on five different metrics. We looked at the latency of user transactions. We looked at how much WAN bandwidth you're consuming between data centers. And then we looked at the data center utilization. Are you able to meet various capacity constraints? And then we looked at staleness. How long is a placement good for? And we also looked at the frequency of migration. If you run volume multiple times, how often do you migrate data? To compare Volley to other heuristics, we considered three main heuristics. We looked at hash, which randomly assigns data items to different data centers. This is trivially optimizing for meeting any type of capacity constraint that you might have. We also looked at 1DC. 1DC places all of your data items in one data center. This is obviously optimizing easily for minimizing your WAN bandwidth between data centers, namely it's zero in this case. Then we looked at common IP. Common IP, for every data item, it picks the data center that is closest to the IP address that most frequently accesses that data item. This is trying to optimize for latency by trying to keep data items close to the user that is most frequently using it. So first, we're going to look at user transaction latency from the analytic evaluation. And this, in this graph, the vertical goes from 0 to 450 milliseconds, and we're measuring user transaction latency. So this includes the latency between a user and them hitting a particular data item, and then any subsequent actions from that data item to other data items, and then back to the user. And over here, we're looking at a few different percentiles of all of the user transactions that occurred in the last 3 weeks of the trace. We're looking at the 50th, the 75th, and the 95th percentile. And we've got the four different heuristics here. And what we see here is that hash is obviously doing a very bad job. It's just randomly assigning data items to different data centers, and you have very bad user latency. And 1DC is actually doing a somewhat better job than that because you don't incur any latency within the data center, and so your latency improves. Common IP does a much better job. It is reducing user latency by moving data items closer to the user. But Volley actually improves latency a little bit more. And the reason Volley is able to improve over Common IP is that in addition to user locations to data items, it's also looking at data item to data item dependencies, which Common IP does not look at. And then we're going to look also at the inter-data center traffic, so the WAN bandwidth that you consume for those portions of the transactions that go between data items that are in different data centers. And on the horizontal, we've got the fraction of those messages that cross data center boundaries from 0 to 1, and on the vertical, we've got four different placements. We have 1DC, which of course consumes no WAN bandwidth, and then hash, which is really bad. 80% of your traffic crosses the data center boundary, and that's very expensive. And then you've got common IP that reduces it down to about 21%. And then Volley cuts that in half at about 11%. Now, that reduction from 21% to 11% is actually real money if you've got a large service that has a large number of users doing lots of transactions. Okay, I'm going to skip this graph and go to my penultimate slide. So in summary, Volley is trying to solve this problem of data partitioning, and it's simultaneously reducing both user latency and operator cost. Compared to common IP, it is reducing data center capacity skew by over 2x, It's reducing inner data center traffic by 1.8x, and at the 75th percentile, it reduces user transaction latency by 30%. And it also runs in a highly parallelizable manner. And Volley is solving a problem that we think that is increasingly becoming important. There are more and more cloud services that are sharing data amongst their users, and you've got cloud operators that are building data centers in a variety of different locations. So it's very natural for you to want to spread your application across these different data centers. Thank you very much. I'll take some questions now. But there were a bunch of people who worked on this, and if I don't get to you, I'd love to have you come by and talk to any one of us afterwards.
Jim Killian, Purdue. So I'm wondering, it looks like you're not using the user information in terms of which user is at which user, at which IP. Is that correct?
Sorry, I didn't get that.
So the logs are basically this IP updated this object, which affects these other objects. But do you know which user wrote the data?
Yes. So we do know which user wrote the data, and the information that we're using there is, as you said, the IP address. But in what way are you alluding to that we could use more information about the user here?
I guess I'm mainly wondering if there might be other ways to leverage the user information, like perhaps certain users would find certain types of data more important than other users, which might affect the latency, how useful the latency is in some sense. Right? Maybe my wall is more important to me than your wall, for example.
So we currently don't have that type of information from each user about their preference. We certainly do have the ability to weight certain types of transactions more than other transactions, where if we know that these transactions that users do are more latency sensitive than other transactions that that users do. And that's a very natural fit for our algorithm. But in general, we've also looked at looking at other information that the user has, such as in our systems, users do specify their location in their account profile. And we looked at what those locations were and what were the locations that users were very frequently logging in from. And I can show you that graph. And it's actually quite a large distance between the user's claimed location. That bottom horizontal line is in thousands of miles from 0 to 12,000, which is half across the planet. And you see that that in terms of the fraction of users, there's about half of them that actually somewhat accurately specify their location, but there's a bunch that don't. And so in general, you do want to be somewhat careful in using user-specified information for these types of optimizations.
Questions. The first question is about you said users travel. So how do you account that in the algorithm? I think I missed that point. Of you said you are fixing the IP addresses to the data center locations. Then how do you account for the users moving across different? So
the way we account for users traveling is that we actually look at the request logs from a long enough period of time where we get to see accesses from to that data item from a variety of different locations that the user is logged in from. And then we weight those edges by how many transactions you do from each of these different locations. And then your data items are going to move around to try and optimize for some combination of the different transactions that you're doing from all of these different locations.
Okay. So the second question I have is about the bandwidth cost that you computed. So from what I know, or what I thought was basically between data centers, these companies have dedicated bandwidth versus you pay most of the cost for the bandwidth getting onto the ISP when you are servicing the clients. So isn't it more important to reduce the bandwidth that's going on to the ISP rather than reduce the bandwidth between the inter-DC?
Yes, you definitely want to do both. And you're right in that data center operators get charged at a at some type of model, typically it's a 95th percentile over some long period of time. Now, but when you're trying to optimize the connection between the users and the data center, you typically end up doing that across all of the different properties that are running inside of that data center. And Ming is actually going to talk about the NTAC system next, which does that. But over here, when we're looking at it from an individual services point of view that is running inside of that data center, now the data center operator is unable to predict which, or it's very difficult to predict, which of these services are going to contribute to some future 95th percentile that I'm going to have, that I'm going to get charged on. And so what they typically end up doing is they end up charging you for the total bandwidth that you're consuming, not only between users and the data center, but also between data centers. And this is true of a large operator that we're familiar with, and also Amazon as well. If you go use an EC2 service, they do charge you for WAN bandwidth even between their data centers.
Hi, Ben Giles, UC Santa Barbara. Great work. So my quick question is, you haven't talked about caching anywhere in the sort of schematic. And I was wondering, given all the prevalence of CDNs, and you know, Facebook has their own CDN plus Akamai, so how does that play into the equation? Does that change the problem at all?
Okay, thanks. So we were specifically looking at services that host a lot of dynamic data. So things like various social networking sites. And I think, you know, basically the question that you might be asking is around replicating this data across different locations. And we looked specifically at services that are cost conscious. And so for them, partitioning is a good solution because you're not consuming any bandwidth in doing this replication. Now, the other extreme that you might consider is replicating your data across a lot of different locations and maintaining consistency across them. And you would want to do that if money is not a constraint. And then you can also consider various intermediate solutions where you're replicating it partially, and you also have various consistency guarantees. And we did not explore those options. We think there are ways to extend our system to handle that, but we haven't implemented or evaluated that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.